I think you got to decide, you know, if you want to be a full-time investor, which is, you know, what I'm into now, where I'm headed, you got to decide to make that obviously, you know, the big part of your life and world. And for a long time, I did the W-2 job and the investment, and it was very difficult. I was working, you know, 60, 80, 90 hours a week sometimes, and it was not sustainable, and I shouldn't have done it as long as I did. So I think you have to decide early, what is your goal? And that will help you develop your strategy. But, you know, if you're looking to operate a business like mine, where you're offering multiple services within the real estate business, then you have to kind of dive into it like I did.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Joseph Cornwell is a former full-time police officer turned real estate investor, agent, and general contractor. Joseph, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey man, pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes to the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell us, where did you start, where you are now, and how did you get there?
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I was a full-time police officer for the past 10 years. I just quote unquote retired from my W-2 job last year, started real estate investing about 6 years ago, which led me into getting my real estate license and becoming a general contractor a couple of years after that, as I started doing rehabs on my properties. And that led me to scaling up my portfolio. Right now, I have 35 apartments and about 14 garages spread out on those properties, and looking to scale up into larger multifamily this year.
Man, that's fantastic. Tell me the 35 apartments, but then 13 garages. What's that?
Yeah. So I actually bought a sixplex here in Cincinnati, where I'm based, that had 10 storage garages behind it. So that kind of got me into very small scale self-storage. Those are all separately rented either to tenants or non-tenants. And that kind of gave me the idea with the construction company that I own to maybe start building some more garages to add income on some of my other properties. So like I said, I don't know the exact number, but we have 14, 16 garages, something like that, that we rent on our properties, the rental properties.
That's really interesting. So you've got a single family home or a multifamily home, whatever it is. Say it's mm-hmm. a quadplex, mm-hmm. and it's got some garage that's not attached to the structure. Mm-hmm. And you separate that out on the lease and say, hey, we're going to lease that separately to somebody else. Is that right?
Exactly. Yep. We offer it to our tenants for a discounted rate. Obviously, it's, you know, especially if you're like a duplex, for example, right. You know, having people come and go through the driveway and the property is not ideal, but I've had times where tenants don't want it, and usually you can get a lot more rent, you know, for a non-tenant. So we offer it both ways and do whatever is easiest.
That's really, really intriguing. I love that. Yeah. How do you navigate the coming and going of random people at the property?
Yeah. So our storage lease strictly states that it is daylight hours only, and it's only for storage. So, you know, we don't have people running, you know, oil change shop or something like that out of a garage. It is strictly for storage of items, very similar to, like, you know, a big mom and pop or franchise storage company would work. And typically our tenants are gone during the day, so it's not an issue. But if we did have an issue, then those tenants communicate, we do an introduction. And obviously, you know, it's kind of a small scale housing, so everybody kind of knows each other. Obviously, if this was 100 units or something, it'd be a lot more management to coordinate all that.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. What is the additional revenue that a garage like that can produce?
Yeah. So for example, and this was pre, you know, lumber prices jumping up on us a couple of years ago, but we were able to build a large side-by-side, like 24 by 24 garage for about $20,000. That was our cost through the construction business. And we were able to rent that out for $300 a month. So, you know, it's a 1.5% rent ratio, new construction with, you know, no expenses, no utilities, no CapEx, because it's all brand new. So obviously, you know, if we could buy apartment deals like that, we'd do it all day long. And, you know, to do that with storage is even less headaches than residential. So nowadays that would probably cost quite a bit more to do, but it made a lot of sense a couple of years ago.
Right. That's absolutely intriguing. Thanks for breaking that down. Scaling small multifamily, you said you started about 6 years ago. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And so in that time, you've been able to acquire 35 apartments, and that was enough to allow you to, you know, quit your full-time job.
Yes, exactly.
That's fantastic. Talk to me about what your business looks like today. I know you guys have your hands in a lot of different things. What's been the iterations of your business, and then how did you scale each of those pieces?
Yeah. So I, like I said, I got my real estate license about 5-6 years ago. And mainly I started as a brand new investor, I started working with some real estate agents that I had just known from buying personal houses and things like that. And I quickly realized that most real estate agents don't know anything about investment property. So that kind of led me down my path of getting my own license. At the time, I thought, you know, I'm just going to do this to buy and sell my own investment property. But it kind of organically grew into, you know, its own business. I had other investor friends like, hey, I know you got your license. You mind showing me this or mind helping me do this? And it kind of out of my control almost, you know, grew into its own business. And I was like, hey, I'm making decent money doing this. I should maybe actually put some time and effort into it, see how much I can scale this. So that led me into scaling that into a much more profitable business than my previous law enforcement job. And again, same situation. I started hiring contractors on my properties I was buying to rehab. I started doing all the work myself. And when I ran into things I didn't want to do, I started hiring people. I quickly realized that hiring and firing contractors was not a lot of fun. And I had the idea that if I, as an investor, am struggling with hiring reliable contractors, then there's probably a lot of other people in my market with the same issue. So I'm going to put the time and effort into building out a business around that service. And I started hiring full-time employees to do my contracting for construction and scale that up. So as of now, we have 7 full-time contractors that work in the business, and I have 1 full-time assistant, and she helps with the construction and the sales side with the agent business as well. So as far as the agent business, it's still just me and my assistant that run all that.
Gotcha. That's really, really interesting. How did you go out and find new clients, I guess, you know, for the construction business? I mean, you're running 2 very different, it seems, businesses. Obviously, they both serve probably the same person, but how did you even find those clients?
Yeah. So very early on in the process, and not really even intentionally, I started posting everything I do on Facebook. You know, I was taking pictures, showing before and after photos, made business pages for those companies. And that quickly organically grew as well. People started kind of liking and following our pages enough where we were getting the word of mouth, people seeing what we're doing. And they're like, wow, that's a great kitchen. You know, let me call them and see if they would do our kitchen or bathroom or basement or whatever it may be. So we started getting outside clients that way, very organically through Facebook, you know, not even doing any paid marketing or anything like that, just kind of word of mouth and seeing it on social media. And then we also obviously get a lot of referrals from our sales business. So if I sell a house for somebody and they want a kitchen done, they know I have a construction company, and we kind of pass referrals back both ways, right? If I redo a kitchen for somebody and next year they get to sell their house, they already know me and like me and trust me, hopefully. And then they've called us to, you know, help them buy and sell real estate as well. So both businesses kind of, you know, help prop each other up in that way.
Right. No, man, that's absolutely fantastic. You know, those are revenue producing businesses, I think, that we talked about earlier, you know, that allow you to continue to invest your own money back into real estate. So what does the future look like? And do you see it changing kind of on your investing strategy?
Yeah. So historically, I've done, you know, the Burr method. I buy very, very, you know, distressed properties that, you know, sometimes need full structural rebuilds, you know, foundation issues, everything you can imagine. So on the residential side, from the 2, 4, 6, 8 unit properties I've bought the last 5, 6 years, that's what we've been doing. As anyone who's in, you know, large rehab business knows, with labor issues, supply chain issues, material issues, it's becoming increasingly difficult to hit, you know, budget and timeline on those construction projects. So I'm hoping this year to transition into more of a stabilized asset that is not necessarily turnkey. I mean, I'm still going to look for value add properties like we all want, but I'm hoping to get into the larger multifamilies, you know, the midsize, the 20, 30, 40, 50 units. That's kind of my next goal. And instead of doing full, you know, rebuilds on these properties, we want to focus on just doing apartment turns, which were, you know, are a little bit more efficient, easier to find material for. And, you know, we can turn those apartments a lot faster than we can do an entire, you know, structural and mechanical rebuild on a house.
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent point. You don't know what your turn time would be per unit, but it's got to be a lot less than a single family house. And of course, if you can go one apartment to the next, I mean, your scalability on that is just so much greater than, you know, job sites across town. That is absolutely intriguing. I love that. What do you think is going to be your method for finding and acquiring those larger properties?
Yeah. So at least here in Cincinnati, I mean, most of those mid-sized multifamilies, which is a small percentage of the inventory, is controlled by the commercial brokers. So having relationships with those brokers, which I have with some, you know, focusing my time on reaching out to those brokers and trying to be one of their first points of contact to move those properties is very important. There are are some still owned by mom and pop owners that you can direct market to, which we've done in the past and plan to do again, because typically it's a little bit smaller than, you know, the large scale funds and syndicators are looking for. You know, they're looking for the 100 plus units typically. So there's not as much competition with the big boys, and that's mid-sized space. But, you know, it is still mostly broker controlled as far as the sales. So doing direct mail and working with the brokers will be our opportunity to find those deals.
Right. That's interesting. What are some challenges you see in that kind of, you know, not middle market, but that kind of lower multifamily count? Like, what are some challenges you foresee, you know, acquiring that 30 to 50 unit size property?
Yeah, I mean, I think just inventory is an issue. So, you know, I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but let's say, you know, if there's 1,000, you know, multifamily units in my area that are over 10 units, let's say, you know, probably 10% fall in that mid-range category. Mm-hmm. So just from a number standpoint, you're already looking at a very small percentage of inventory. And then obviously, as we all see, there's a very short inventory issue on every size of real estate, right? So large multifamily, small, and even residential, a lot of people just aren't selling right now. So that's going to be the biggest challenge, is even finding deals that are able to be sold. And then once you find them, you know, trying to get them at a price that makes sense for the value add strategy that we're looking to do.
Yeah. And I would imagine, you know, those unit sizes are going to be more vintage property as well. So, you know, then you're also working with an older product.
Exactly.
Gotcha. That's absolutely intriguing. Hey, tell us, I know we've talked a little bit about, you know, where you've come from, where you guys are going, the type of products you're looking for. If somebody wanted to kind of replicate your success or do what you've done, what would be some things you would tell them to start off, first steps?
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to decide, you know, if you want to be a full-time investor, which is, you know, what I'm into now, where I'm headed, you got to decide to make that obviously, you know, the big part of your life and world. And for a long time, I did the W-2 job and the investment, and it was very difficult. I was working, you know, 60, 80, 90 hours a week sometimes, and it was not sustainable, and I shouldn't have done it as long as I did. So I think you have to decide early, what is your goal? And that will help you develop your strategy. But, you know, if you're looking to operate a business like mine, where you're offering multiple services within the real estate business, then you have to kind of dive into it like I did, you know, get your real estate license. Maybe that means getting trade licenses, depending on what state you're in. You know, obviously, if you're going to operate a general contracting company, there's a lot of hoops to jump through with that as well, depending on your state. So I think it's really deciding what you want to do and trying to work backwards to build a strategy around that. You know, and I don't know if the way I did it necessarily makes sense for most people, but it certainly is a way to do it, and it works, and it has worked, and hopefully will continue to serve me in the future. But, you know, the hardest part is it is difficult. No matter what road you take, it's going to be difficult. So you just got to really dedicate, you know, a big part of your life to doing it.
Right. No, that's a sound advice, and certainly appreciate that. Let's jump here into the final four questions. The first one is this: what is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
Yeah, I would say BiggerPockets is probably one of the best, you know, real estate social networks that I've been a part of. I've been on there before I bought my first property, and it's been a massive resource. And I'm sure most of the listeners here probably have heard of it, but that's probably the most helpful resource I've had since starting real estate.
That's awesome. Question number two: what is one mistake you could help our listeners avoid, and how would you avoid it?
When working with contractors, especially, I would definitely try to get referrals from people you trust. And I would definitely have a system that, whether it's a contract or some sort of structure in place, where you're only paying them for completed work and you're checking the work when it's completed. Either you or somebody else you trust is checking it. Don't get burnt like I did in the beginning by, you know, giving thousands of dollars away to people who aren't doing the work or not doing it correctly.
Right. Oh, yeah. Happens all the time, unfortunately. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Yeah, I think for me, one of my, you know, philanthropic goals, if you want to call it that, is to give back to others who, you know, are on this journey behind me. So I recently started a YouTube channel where I'm basically just going to lay out everything I've done. And I've got a few videos out now where I'm going to try to help other people get to where I'm at and hopefully excel past that as well. And I do the same thing with some of the local high schools. I teach some, you know, financial literacy classes as a guest speaker. And that's something I want to hopefully grow into, like an actual company, nonprofit, where we help other people learn financial freedom, learn financial literacy, learn how to invest. Because unfortunately, in this education system we're in America, it's not really taught. So we're hoping to pass that message on to other people that will hopefully have an advantage that we might not have had.
That's awesome. I love that. Joseph, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah. So you feel free to email me anytime. It's jcornwell@realtyonestop.com. My Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, I think, are all in the links that we have here on the show. Correct?
Yep. That's right.
So feel free to reach out on any of those platforms or email me anytime.
Awesome. Joseph, thanks for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.